Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome today to Jack Hindle to the Overseas Athlete Podcast. Jack, great to finally get you on board. I know I've pushed it back a couple of times, so thanks for your patience and thanks for jumping on.
No, it's okay, mate. Nice to be on.
Yeah, no, fantastic. And Jack's got a background in football and an English person, as you can hear from his accent, a couple of stints in Australia, Malaysia and Italy. So if you want to give us a bit of a background just into, you know, yourself and where you grew up and how you became an overseas footballer.
Yeah, mate, sure. I'm 30 years of age now, from the north part of England, as you can tell. Been playing football since I can remember and had some, you know, amazing opportunities. And I think it was around about, I think it was 26 when someone mentioned it about playing overseas, when my contract was about to finish at Barrow in League Two in England. And since then, it's just opened my eyes to, you know, the world of football and then stuff outside of football that some, you know, some lads might not get to experience if they, you know, they stay in England. So it's something I've, you know, enjoyed a lot.
I suppose just on that, when you're in England, obviously that's, you know, the football capital of the world. So you don't really, you probably don't think as much outside of playing in the UK because you've got so much football there. Whereas people from Australia or maybe even from America, where it's not the number one sport, probably look at these opportunities maybe a bit earlier.
Yeah, I mean, I think the English mentality, you want to try and play as high as you can for as long as you can. And, you know, we've got obviously the Premier League, the, you know, the most exciting league in the world, the most funded and watched league in the world as well. And then that just filters down Championship, League One, League Two, Conference, and, you know, even down to Conference North and South now. So it's very competitive, very saturated. And a lot of lads, you know, don't really want to move from London to Manchester or Manchester to London. If they get an opportunity to sign for a club down south, it's like, oh, I don't know what to do. It's quite far. I think it's just the English mentality.
Yeah, it's well, now that you've been in Australia a few times, you realise what far is, because we're such a spread out country compared to
it's crazy.
A few hours away.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like being here, I remember when I was in Brisbane, and a friend of mine was like, "Oh, we want to go to Rockhampton at the weekend," and I was like, "All right, okay, yeah, not too far." You check in, it's like a 13-hour drive, and I'm thinking, who wants to sit in the car for that long? But it's just normal here.
Yeah, and you're still in the same country, you're still in the same state, doing that.
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy. Queensland is, you know, it's amazing, but it's just so big. It's just vast.
Yeah. Well, how did what was your first taste of overseas, and sort of how did it come about? Obviously, as you said, you're 26, coming to the end of your career in the UK of your contract. How did the discussion come about, or how did the opportunity come about for you?
I think because it was during the strange times of the COVID, the COVID stuff. So it was 2020, and we'd just been promoted via winning the league due to the point system, and there were 7 games left at Barrow in the 2019-2020 season in the conference, and on points, you know, points per average, and, you know, they sort of figured it out that we were going to win the league with 7 games to go, which was quite unexpected. They thought it was going to be null and void for the conference. So we were promoted, and, you know, things happened, and everyone came back in pre-season. It was just a mess, and games were played, and it was just really strange. No fans. Like, we played Derby in the Carabao Cup on Sky Sports, and there was no fans. And for boys at that level in conference to play Derby, huge, you know, huge club with no fans, it was, you know, quite disappointing. And I was just thinking, like, is this it? Like, this taste of the Football League, is this, you know, is this what it's going to be like? And I was, you know, my contract was coming towards the end, and it was just very difficult. The season was a bit stop-start, and it was just very difficult with the COVID. And I was thinking, you know, what else is out there, sort of thing? Like, is now the right time? Because a few boys I knew had gone and played in, you know, college in America and gone and played in Australia. A few friends of mine had done that. And there was quite a lot of lads who were going on loan, you know, like Bellingham went to Dortmund. I think it was Reece Nelson went to Germany. And there was a couple of, you're hearing it quite a lot in the media, that a lot of the English players were going out on loan or signing permanent deals. Like Sancho went to Dortmund also. And it's sort of like, people weren't saying it was a bad thing. It was a good thing because they were going out and playing. So I spoke to a friend of mine who spoke to an agent in Spain, and I was just getting some feelers and just seeing like what the opportunities would be, and whatever. And one thing led to another. I was offered a contract in Spain for a team, I think in Segunda B, which is the third tier. And then quite sneakily, actually, the coach of that team messaged me with behind, not behind the agent's back, but privately. I got a message from this unknown number and he was like, "Don't sign the contract. I think I'm getting the assistant manager's job in Malaysia." And I said to my dad, I was like, "Did he even play football over there? Like, what goes on over there?" So I did my research into it. He was like, "Look, there's a contract on the table for you in Malaysia if you want it. Do your research, have a look, see what you think." And it was back end of 2020. And I just said to my dad, I said, "Look, I think if I don't take this opportunity, it will never come around again." And, I spoke to a few people, and luckily there was quite a few people who I could speak to and get advice from about, going that far away, because it's around about a 16-hour flight to Malaysia from England. And, I didn't know anyone who had played there before. Just a friend of my dad's who'd been the head of the FA in Hong Kong, so I was able to speak to him just to get some feelers in and around, what goes on in Asian football. So that was how it came about, really, to go out to Malaysia.
So with the coach that you were talking about, was he Spanish?
So he
Or was
was,
he
yeah,
English?
he was Spanish, he sent me a message and said, "Look, I'm going to be going out there. There is an opportunity. The manager likes you, and he thinks you're an asset." And I think at that time it was three visas, and one of them had to be Asiana, so it was 3 plus 1. So you have to be quite careful with who you sign. So, like I said, it was too good of an opportunity not to take. And then we had a couple of FaceTimes back and forth, the assistant manager, the manager who was Italian, the assistant Spanish. And we had a FaceTime a couple of times, and then I flew out there in the February 2021.
Very different circumstances, thinking you're going to Spain to
Yeah, it
Malaysia.
was strange. Yeah, it was strange. It happened so fast because the Spanish club, obviously, that time of year, because it's sort of mid-season, are pushing to sort of get the player there. Whereas in Asia, the season started March that year. They pushed it back because of COVID. It's usually February to November, but that year it was March, and they just pushed it back a little bit due to the COVID. So we did all our discussions. The deal was signed. I had to wait a few weeks for visas, and then I flew out early February, and I had to do the hotel quarantine. So it was obviously not a normal circumstance because my dad was saying, "I'll come with you to Malaysia and settle you in." I said, "Look, you can't. It's so strict." It was working visas or residents only who could travel. So I think there was about six people on my plane to Dubai, and then I think two of them got off, and there was four of us on a plane from Dubai to Kuala Lumpur, which was bizarre because planes like that, they take 300, 400 passengers. So you could just tell straight away, I thought, this is not normal. And as soon as we landed into KL International Airport, I was looking around, and the place is empty. And then round the corner, everyone's in hazmat suits. It was really, really strange. It was like, I'd never flown that far before in my life, and it was just really surreal because it was like something from a film. It was like everyone was in hazmat suits, and there was really strict rules. You had to show certain things. You had to show all your paperwork, otherwise you weren't getting in. It was a really strange couple of days that.
It would be, and I'll get onto that in a second. With all that paperwork and your flights, visas, did the club handle that for you, or did you have an agent at that point as well, or did you just go through the contracts with the guy that you knew?
Yeah, so obviously the assistant manager and the manager sorted everything out, and then a few days later, the president then FaceTimed me with five of his staff from the club, and it was really well organized. I thought, wow, this is obviously it's the top level over there. They have not many professional clubs in the country. I think there's 14 in the Super League now, and it's a huge country. Like it's massive. I think it is bigger than England. It's bigger than the United Kingdom. So everything's going swimmingly at this point, and there's a lot of good things. I've got a lot of trust in it because I'm speaking to everyone at the club. It's not a case of it's a dodgy agent, or you're not speaking to anyone from the club and it's being relayed and you're the middleman. You're speaking to the president, the manager, the technical director, the sport, like you're speaking to everyone, the CEO, like you're speaking to everyone. So I was very comfortable in that sense. So the visa was sorted out for me because obviously it was a professional working visa. So I just had to pay the flights, and as soon as I arrived, I was reimbursed.
Okay. Interesting. Oh, that's good. That's good. And I suppose, yeah, given that would give you a lot of confidence, as you said, being able to speak to a number of people, not just one person, then you get there and all of a sudden it's a disaster. So, yeah, important, I guess an important point for people when they're doing their own research.
Yeah, I mean, I think from what I'm aware, I'm the only fully English footballer to ever play in Malaysia.
Oh,
A lot
really?
of the boys who were there are, a friend of mine who plays for a team called Sabah. He's half English, half Malay. So
Right,
he's
okay.
got a Malay passport, so he's not classed as a visa. He plays for the national team as well. He's doing really well over there, like called Stuart Wilkin. So it's quite difficult to sort of get these moves, and a lot of people were like, "How did you end up there?" And I told them obviously the story with the Spanish assistant manager, and it does come down to a lot of luck to get to get in the door sometimes, but obviously the ability of the player takes takes center stage, and that's ultimately what gets you the deal, is what you've done previously. It's not like a case of people going around giving out free tickets to anyone who wants to go. And I think that's what can be misconstrued sometimes, because a lot of people just think they can just go when it's such a small market and very difficult to get in. I was just lucky that I didn't need an agent in the end. It was done directly through the manager, who I've got a great relationship to this day from, 3, 4 years ago, that he took me there.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? As you say, there's definitely a bit of luck involved with just having that guy happen to take a job, but it's what happens a lot with people I speak to. It's just the networking as a whole. It's people that you know, and then opportunities present themselves and like that. One, you need the ability, obviously, as a player, but they need to know you as a person, and no doubt it ticked all the boxes for them.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it was very strange, and to go out there alone, after getting through the whole quarantine thing, they stuck us all on a bus straight to the hotel. People were looking around. It was sort of like a zombie sort of movie where everyone's sort of waiting. They're just throwing people on the bus. The army's there, and we went straight through the city. We stayed in a really nice hotel, and it was like, "Look, can't leave the room for 6 days. After the
Okay.
third day, we'll call everyone out one by one, and you'll do a test to make sure you're negative. And if you're negative, you can leave on the seventh day or the sixth day." So
Right.
obviously the jet lag was a bit strange. I was in this massive hotel room alone, couldn't leave the room. So it was a bit surreal the first couple of days. And there was a 1 hour window where you could order food from outside. And I've looked on sort of the places to order, and they've got a Nando's. I'm thinking, "Oh, great, this is perfect. I'm back at home." Because the meals that were coming every morning, it was crazy. So obviously, I was thinking maybe cereal, but it was like an egg, like just like a raw egg in the shell, with like noodles, chicken for breakfast. And it was just like, this is going to take some getting used to. So it was a tough 6 days. But luckily, it was just 6 days for me.
Because that's obviously a lot to absorb and I guess get your head around for yourself first time obviously leaving England and doing something like this in the middle of COVID and you've got all these problems and protocols and paperwork and like that, being stuck in a room like a prisoner for 6 days with a 1 hour window to order some food. Like that's mental. But how did you deal with that? How did you sort of get through that? Was it the drive of knowing you were going to have a professional deal? That's what you were going for?
I think because I knew I was coming off the back of, being at a decent club, and I had a few good years at this club, and signing for this monster of a team in Malaysia called Kelantan at the time. They were sort of like the modern day Man United. Used to win everything in the early 2000s, and then since stuff had happened, they'd sort of fallen off. So I was aware of the magnitude, because for an English player to go out there and play for a club as big as this is sort of that level. There isn't a comparison really in sort of like League One, League Two, maybe Portsmouth, Sunderland when they sort of dropped down, but obviously now they're back in the Championship anyway. So this sort of magnitude, I think I was just raring to go, just to see what it was like, because I was quite narrow-minded growing up. I was very much, like I said before, it was like, I want to play in the Premier League, And that is it. Like, that is the goal, to play in the Premier League, and there's nothing else I don't care about anywhere. Even when the Champions League's on, it's like we're the best in the world. We have the best league, the best players, and even though we weren't, going anywhere near it in World Cups and Euros as a country, I think it's just the mentality that it was just a case of you were just so tunnel visioned into being at home.
No, I can see that. And as you said, from your experience now, no doubt it's opened your eyes thinking that there's, and I think this is part of the, the driver of the podcast is there are so many opportunities in the world to go and play football, earn decent money, experience different cultures and languages and just all sorts of different cool stuff. And you've obviously experienced that. So how was the first sort of couple of days of getting to the club and training and settling in?
Yeah, so it was quite interesting, really. The owner of our club owned quite a lot of sort of small hotels and sort of low star hotels, like budget. So he said, "Look, stay in my hotel until you sort it out," because in my deal, I had a certain amount of money for accommodation. And because you've got to do your research, you can't go in blind. You're looking where you're going to be living in your city, what's there, apartments, houses, like what can I do? So I was in a hotel for around about a week, which was fine. And then I moved into the main apartment, which was like a big luxury high-rise building in the city, which was a really nice brand new facility. So I already knew that going in, that that was going to be the case. Instead of clutching around and being like, "Oh my God, where are we going to live? Where are we going to stay?" And I was traveling alone as well, like quite a lot of lads who do make the trip to Asia are usually a little bit older on the way, not retiring, but slowing down a little bit, maybe 30s, got two kids and a wife. And so obviously for them, it's a big deal to make sure that's sorted out. Whereas for me, it's a little bit more, not carefree, but a little bit more blasé with it, to be able to be like, "Yeah, I can go there because it's just me. I can make that decision on my own." But no, the first sort of 2, 3 weeks were really, really, really well organized. We had a pre-season trip. We went and played, I think, two teams. We were staying in nice, hotels. Food was always sorted out, and all the kit was there. Training was well organized, and it started off really, really well.
Oh, excellent. Well, again, that would just give you that peace of mind that you're not going to a foreign country and just going to be left like in a third world country with not much going on,
Exactly.
And with the research that you spoke about, how did you go about that? Like when you were looking at cities, places to live, just things to do and understand the whole culture of where you were going, was that just a lot of Google searching or was there anything you found that really helped you?
Yeah, well, I was obviously quite lucky because the assistant manager had got there, I think, about a month before us, because they had to decide their local players and do the trials sort of for that to pick the squad. With only having three visas, you need to make sure you've got, your other players sorted out, because your visas are sorted a bit earlier to get them across. So yeah, it was just obviously speaking to him. He was telling me where he was staying. He was telling me about, certain things that were going on. Like, Kelantan is a Muslim state. It's an Islamic state, so it's very different to the rest of Malaysia. Whereas Kuala Lumpur is very Americanized. It does give a feel, of like a New York, London, Melbourne. It's Brisbane. It's very multicultural. A lot of Americans, Australians, and English working there because they have a big company, Petronas. So they have their own oil, and it's a lot of people come from all around the world to work for them. So it's a lot different. So I had to do a lot of research going into Kelantan because there's a lot of strict do's and don'ts that you wouldn't know if you didn't do your research. And some of them are, they say, death penalty for a lot of the stuff. But you just have to be very careful.
And the Spanish coach that you were dealing with, did he speak a good enough amount of English that helped you?
Yeah, his English was amazing. On the first day when I met them, when I came out of the quarantine hotel, the Spanish manager and the Italian manager, they said to me, he said, "Look, when we FaceTimed you spoke too quick and we didn't have a clue what you were saying." So I was just thinking, "Oh my God, like, what is going on?" But no, it was all fine, because I picked up, little bits from them when they were talking to each other. and their English was pretty much fluent. And I think that's just an English thing. Like we're just so naive to be like, oh, we don't need to learn that. We'll be fine with our English all over the world. But it's massively important that you do pick up bits and you try and learn, like especially with the Malaysian, because a lot of the boys in that part of the world, in Malaysia and Kelantan, they have their own sort of Bahasa style of language. It's not like the authentic sort of Malay. So some of the stuff that they were saying, even some of the Malay people from Kuala Lumpur, I'll know that's a completely
Yeah,
different like
different,
tongue.
like a slang type language.
Yeah. So you just have to pick up little things, like if the keeper said like I don't know, Tiga, when he's trying to do the wall, I know, right, okay, that's three people in the wall. Like you just need to know those little bits really, just to help you out, because end of the day, football's a universal language, everyone knows that, but it's the details, and if you're making an effort, it goes a long way with the staff, the Malaysian staff, the Malaysian players, because it's like, oh, he's not just here, for a holiday, which can be the case for a lot of players.
That was going to be my next question around like fitting into the team in the first couple of weeks. Obviously, language barrier would be number one problem, I would guess. But and as you say, when you get on the pitch, you can play football. But was that just picking it up as you went along, like day after day, just listening to little bits of information and recalling, important things?
Yeah, I think, we obviously the staff was the Italian manager, assistant Spanish, a goalkeeper coach Italian, strength conditioning coach Spanish, and then two Malaysian staff then who helped. So the team talk would mostly be done in English because you had a few, I reckon 5 out of the 15 Malay boys could speak good English, and then the assistant, the one of the Malaysian staff would come in and say, look, this, that, and this. And then I'm thinking, is he telling him the right things here? Like, because sometimes he could, he could be saying anything. And I think obviously that can be a problem when the results don't go the right way. I've not got a clue what the lads are saying, when they're speaking so fast in full sentences. But no, there was no problem. The manager made me captain. So I had that authority and whatever. It was just very, it became very difficult as the results sort of happened, because we had so much pressure on us, because we were this huge club that, demanded the trophies because that's what they were used to, and they just had a few bad years. It was just a very, it became very difficult very fast.
Sorry, you dropped out there for a sec, but you so how did the first season go as a whole? How did you find it? How was the success and off the pitch and on the pitch?
Yeah, it was very difficult in the end. We had a couple of losses, I think, in the sort of few weeks. We lost the first game. We won the second game. I think we picked up a couple of points in between, and then we played, I think, two games back to back where we lost. And you could just see the president, he'd come down to the changing rooms after a loss, and I think that's quite common in these countries where the president gets involved and he's doing all the talking, and a lot of the boys are just taking a back seat because they don't want to say anything to the hand that's feeding them. It's just a completely different culture, whereas say back at home there's quite a lot of back and forth, opinions and stuff like that, whereas there it was a case of, oh, I'm not going to say anything bad to the president. Every time he came in, he put his hand down, the lads would put their head on his hand, and it was a huge respect. Which I couldn't really understand that, because of I knew how he was treating the local players and how he was treating us. I didn't The respect with me and the president sort of fell apart, and I wasn't very happy with certain things that were going on. Like there was one game where we played away, and we'd flown previously to Kuala Lumpur about 45 minutes, and this game we took the jungle road, and it's about 12 hours on a bus with a few stops. I reckon it took us to get there, and the bus broke down, so that's why it took so long. And there was no food on the bus, and we stopped at KFC, and it was the night before a game. And I just said to the one of the staff who was on there, he was, on the admin side. I said, we need to have a talk about this, because if he expects us to go and win tomorrow after this day, it's not happening. And you could just see, like, the pressure was coming, and we had a big conversation the next day, and I just said what I, you know, spoke my mind. As someone who's come from England, where everything was done professionally really well, I expected sort of a certain standard, and I think that's what you have to bring is like as the visa player, that's the whole point in you being there, that you bring that level. And yeah, it just he just couldn't understand it, and I think that was a straw that broke the camel's back, really. And then I played the next game, and I'd had a bit of a problem with my knee just a few weeks ago, but you know, it was all fine, all sorted. And then in that game, my knee broke down and couldn't rehab it, and then I had to have surgery in Malaysia then, and I was then out of the for the whole rest of the season. So I probably played 10 games in total in Malaysia in that season, and then I had to have surgery in the September, which is about three quarters through the season.
Well, and with that, the bus trip as one, is that an example? Was that like a punishment for the players? It was like you're not winning, or what was that? Was it just the president just going, I'm not paying for the flight this week?
Yeah, I reckon, like, because that happened one of the games where we flew down and we drew against Johor, which is right at the bottom of the country. It's basically Singapore, and it was like, right, whoever wants to, I think he gave us a day off after that game, and it was like, whoever wants to go back can come back on the bus now, but if you don't, you can fly tomorrow. And it was just like, I was sort of saying, no, we either all go back together, or we all stay together. And it was just like, it just didn't feel right. And there was quite a lot of things where he was, you know, he'd threaten to say like, you better win today, you know, it's the bus or stuff like this. So if you can imagine a road that's something off a roller coaster with no lights, and you've got the bus driver slamming on every now and again because there might be an elephant on the road, honestly, it was just something you'd have to sort of see to believe. So it was just a case of, like I say, at the start when things were going so well, and I think everything was budgeted for with the flights and stuff like that down to games, because it makes quite a lot of the boys feel a certain way. You know, quite a lot of the boys were quite young, and I don't think they'd ever had that before. So for them to fly to a game, and we had this, you know, this guy on the social media taking videos, pictures, and it makes them, you know, I think you go into a game thinking a bit more confident because you're getting these sort of big professional type of things, you know, nice hotel, food before the game, flying down to games are on TV or, you know, live to watch on YouTube because of COVID, the fans couldn't come in. So it made the boys feel a certain way. And when I think when that got taken away, with the results, it just, I think some of the boys just, you know, it's quite difficult then to sort of get out of that rut over there because of the mentality. And I think quite a lot of the boys too, with them being Muslims, they get married quite early, and then they start a family. And as soon as they start a family, then it's like the football's done.
Yeah, a bit of a morale killer, isn't it? I suppose that's probably what you're looking for there, is like everything's going well, flights, accommodation, you're getting treated like proper professionals, and then having it sort of taken away. And then I guess it's a bit of a downward slope then, because then performance will drop, and then you get less perks, and then performance will drop, morale will drop. It's difficult to manage.
Yeah, it's tough, especially when, you know, we train so much, and but because we had European staff, it was a case of I want to do two sessions a day, and you've got some unfit Malaysian players because of what they eat, but that's the culture, you know, the way they're eating rice every day, and the coach is like, no, I want you to eat this, and they're like, I'm sorry, but been eating rice since they were 2 years old, and it's just, you know, the stuff that they do, and you just can't stop some things, and if you try and change the culture too much, it becomes very difficult. I think you just have to try and tweak it, you know, and not take too much away, because otherwise, especially over there, you have no idea what the boys are saying to each other, because you will never, especially that sort of slang Malay, you'll never pick that up. And yeah, I think that was the downfall in the end. I think too much was tried to was changed, and yeah, it's just impossible to change the culture over there for that.
And how did it end for you then with the injury, and then were you on a 1 year deal or a 2 year deal? How did that finish up?
Yeah, so it was a 1-year deal with an option. And I was obviously wanting to see how it went and play against the other teams and see, what other opportunities would be out there. And I felt like I did quite well in my time, because you bring a style of football over, which is, not seen. I remember quite a lot of fans would always praise the work rate because they'd never see that. And, I think the first game I played, I remember pressing quite early. And the game was about 5 o'clock and it was about 40 degrees. Humidity was at 90. I turn around and no one's following me. So I'm thinking, oh, they don't press it because it's too hot. So I better sort of figure that out pretty soon. But yeah, it was just a real shame with the knee injury because I would have loved to have stayed there for longer. I was really well looked after in the contract with having a certain amount of money for insurance that covered it. So it was a case of find a surgeon. The best one in that country, and did it all privately. It was done really quick, very well done, by a South Korean surgeon because I had a South Korean rehab sports science guy who said, "Look, this is the problem. This is what you need. Go and get it done fast, and you'll be out for 4 months." And it was a bit frustrating because obviously that would have took me past the season and past the contract end date, and because of the way things went, and I don't think they liked how I sort of came across with some of the changes that I wanted to make and implicate. I don't think they liked that. But I was quite lucky, really, in the end because the manager got sacked during my surgery, and then the club went into turmoil and couldn't pay players, and now they're paying the penalty for that now, and they've been kicked out of the Malaysian league.
Oh wow. So yeah, a lot. I know there's so many things that can happen behind the scenes. They can, yeah, cripple clubs, players, everything. It's difficult situations. As you say, you just got to make the most of it. So what was your plan from there? Obviously, how long you'd been there now? 10 months?
Yeah, so I flew back in November to do some more rehab because I'd run out of my insurance money, and I was with the rehab guy for 3 months every day, two times a day after my surgery, and someone I still stay in contact with now. He did wonders for me, and he enabled me to try and get back quicker, just so we could, sort something out contractually for another club or the same club or something. So I was very lucky in that sense. And being a member of the PFA in England, I was able to go back to England and use the St George's Park where England do train the first team, the under 21s, the women's. They host all the sort of UEFA Bs, UEFA As there. It's a great facility, so they have a rehab center there. So I was able to use that for a few weeks, back end of 2021, early 2022. And I think as soon as I got back, I just couldn't. I don't think I could handle the fact that I wasn't there anymore. And I think mentally, I really struggled with that. And it's something I've probably not talked about. There's probably only a handful, maybe one or two people who I've spoken to about it. But I think after that, it just sort of crushed me, really.
Just thinking, what was the biggest thing that was on your mind or that was eating away at you?
I think knowing that I should have probably still been there, and the next season, watching the games from home on YouTube, knowing that I wasn't there, playing for such a club of that stature compared to back home is something that just doesn't happen to someone around that level. Like the club on social media had, a quarter of a million, 300,000 followers on Instagram, and the comments, the po the like it would just have every game, there'd just be thousands and thousands of comments, and the fan base was huge. And to have that sort of taken away, and to you were felt you put on such a pedestal. I remember every time we went to the supermarket, people taking pictures, wanting autographs. Every time we were in Kuala Lumpur, people knew we played for the club, and you'd be treated in a certain way. And I made quite a lot of friends in Kuala Lumpur outside of football, and they were just like amazed that there was this English person playing for this random team in Kelantan. And to have that all taken away, from a crazy innocuous injury, where I wasn't smashed, I wasn't, wasn't a bad tackle. I think I was just really, I think I was just sort of just destroyed me really for a while, and I tried to come back too soon. I couldn't run, but I tried to train with a team just to get fit, and I just couldn't move. And then that's a detrimental fact to you then, because people think, oh, he's just tossing it off because he's played at this level, that level, and he doesn't really want to be here. But it's just a case of I didn't tell anyone about it because I didn't want them to know, because it's seen as a sign of weakness. If you were to say, look, this is where I'm at, zero confidence, what's going on in your head, I think it was seen as a sign of weakness if I did speak to anyone about it.
And how did you work through that then? How did you sort of get past that, or if you didn't get past it, get through it to then go and get back playing?
It took me a while. It took me a while, I think, for the whole of 2022. I think I must have played around about maybe 10 games in the whole of 2022. Ended up signing for a team in Wales, because I failed a medical to come to Australia in the June due to my knee surgery. So that sort of knocked me as well, that sort of period. And I played for a team in the Welsh Premier League because it's close to home. I just needed the fitness to try and get back again for the 2023 window in Asia. And yeah, I don't know, I just felt like I'd never kicked a ball before. I just didn't feel as athletic as I was, and I think I was 28 at that point. I just felt like it's probably the worst moment in my career, and I didn't score any goals. I just didn't feel the same. It was just, I think it was such a difficult time to sort of get past what had happened. And that's something that I've just probably the weakest part of my attributes as a footballer was probably that mentality side.
Just been able to put that not to the side, but in a way put it to the side to try and get back to some sort of level. Because was that your goal, to try and get back into Asia somewhere?
Yeah, I just wanted that feeling back. I just wanted to have that no, not the notoriety, but the sort of acknowledgement that you are a good footballer. I think everyone who plays football, at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, they want people to turn around and say, do you remember him? He was an unbelievable footballer. He had a great career. I think that's what it was probably came down to. The fact that I've been quite fortunate, I'd won a league in England, which is something a lot of players never get to do in their career. And it might be the conference, but the conference was my Champions League at that time. So us to win the conference, get promoted to League Two is something I'll never forget, and no one can take that away from me. No one can take that medal away. But I think, yeah, it was just to have that taken away. It was just tough. It was just really tough, and I just wanted to get back there so bad, and I knew I couldn't. And because of how difficult it is there, because they want players coming in with a bit of a name, who've come off scoring goals, been at decent clubs. So yeah, for me it was quite difficult to get back there. And then I got quite fortunate with then getting to Australia in the June of 2023.
So how did and I suppose at that age as well, look, it's 28, 29 years old, it's old, for a footballer. In a way, to if you've come through injury and you're trying to get back, it's harder to get as fit and as fast and as nimble as you were. So obviously, well done firstly for being able to do that. But then how did the opportunity come up to get over here?
Well, I was trying to just sort out a way to get back, really, and I went back to Malaysia in 2022 to join the mid window to get a move back, even though I knew my body wasn't right, and I was just trying to force myself to get through it, strapped up, and painkillers and whatever. And obviously the Australia move didn't happen, so that was always on the cards to sort of go that way, to do well in Australia, to maybe then get back to Asia that way. And a club I'd been at previously, Gateshead, the manager was a friend of the Peninsula Power manager in Brisbane, and he was able to ask him about what I was like, and attributes, and what's he like as a lad, and able to get in. So I was very lucky that they were able to bring me over in the mid window. of the season and you know, play over there for 10 games. And I think it just gave me a bit of a boost, really, knowing that someone wanted me to sign, because I'd had a couple of months where, you know, I was speaking to clubs, speaking to agents to get back to Asia, and it was a case of, oh no, sorry, he's not played high enough, or no, sorry, his transfer market value isn't high enough. Because in England, that isn't something that we consider for a player. It's like, what le you know, is he decent? Have we played against him before? Like, what levels he played at? Whereas in sort of Asia and these other countries, similar, they want to know how much he's worth, what he can bring to the club, like how old is he, how many goals has he scored. So it's a very different way of signing players.
And did that give you a bit of a, as you said, a bit of a boost? Was it good just to get back out playing football, feeling a bit fitter? Did you get a bit of fitness back? Did your injury sort of clear up a bit?
Yeah, I had it, obviously, you know, played a few games in Wales, and then 2023 I was able to get fit, and I think obviously I had a lot of time then to obviously reflect and just, you know, switching mentality, and you know, two sessions a day on my own, and thinking, you know, if I'm not going to do it, no one's going to do it for me. So just getting to a level of fitness that was, you know, at higher than the level I was playing at, really, was always the aim. And knowing that someone wanted me, and I had a few options, it was nice to have a few options to go to Australia. And I picked the right one, and the manager was always asking me to sign, and you know, there's weeks of this going on, and he's someone who I still speak to today, and we were on the phone the other day, we still have a great relationship, and they were very good to me up there. And I had a short spell of playing really well that then opened the door for other things.
And with the like that, as you mentioned, like trying to get onto agents, clubs through Asia, transfer market value, etc. How do you manage that? Where do you go as a player to try and do you, is it social media mainly that, or is it word of mouth, or is it people that you know? Is
Yeah, I
it
mean,
a jack
it's
of all
quite a
of
tough
that?
one these days, isn't it? Because I think a lot of people do rely on the social media side. I'm not as active as I should have been. Someone told me that quite a while ago, that if I was more active on Instagram during the time in Malaysia, it would have been beneficial to me. Whereas I've never been one to post after a game saying, "Oh, lads, we're unlucky today. Really happy the fans were there." I've never really been that type of player. Like, I never posted about my surgery. I think all the fans in Malaysia were wondering where I was. I've just never really been that guy to sort of show everything. I think that's obviously why, as well, only one or two people know about what sort of went on when I got home and how sort of depressed I was, because I've never really been that big open character. And I think the social media game in Asia is huge. The friend who I was talking about before, Stuart Wilkin, I think he's, you know, transformed his life as well through his social media, the way he presents himself, you know, posting about games, training, all this stuff. I just don't care about it enough. But I think a lot of people, like you say, for the agent side, they do rely on the social media, the Instagram, like LinkedIn, places like that. But you have to be so careful that, you know, you're not speaking to the wrong person. You have to know the agent or someone through the agent. You can't just expect someone's going to do all these things for you for nothing.
I had someone actually the other day. I get people reach out to me on LinkedIn all the time thinking I'm an agent now, which I'm not. Asking me, you know,
Probably is probably a
for all sorts of
compliment.
advice. For all sorts of advice. So I know a few now, and they sent me this screenshot of a QR code saying they're an agent. So I sent it off to a few agents to verify it. And apparently now through the FIFA website you can verify that someone is a qualified agent, which obviously is a good recommendation. But also I think from speaking to a couple of basketballers a couple of weeks ago, is just getting that confirmation, speaking to two or three, four or five people that you know, or seeing what players they've represented before. Because a lot of people can obviously claim that now with social media and take pictures of Ronaldo and superimpose me beside him in a suit and make it look like I'm his agent. You know what I mean? So
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
difficult. So research and speaking to people, I guess, that you trust and that you can form some sort of good opinion for is key in trying to do that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, it's a crazy world out there. I think like Twitter's just transformed the way everyone gets their football news, or sport news, especially more news as well. But you know, I go on Twitter in the morning here when the games have been played back at home in England to see the lineup, the scores, rumors, information, and it's just changed everything. It used to have to go on to teletext to see what scores the game were. You know, if who won between Newcastle and Sunderland, I'll quick check teletext because it's the only way you could find out. Whereas now everything's at your fingertip, and you have to be so careful because I've dealt with a few people, you know, who have said certain things and promised certain things, and it's just not been the case. Especially in it's there's a lot of money now in Asia. I think obviously the Saudi the stuff has kicked that off, and it's a you know sort of domino effect, and it dribbles down the ladders where there's a lot of money now for second division in Thailand or second division in Indonesia and places like this where you know a lot of lads move for the money, and then they don't understand the lifestyle that it actually comes with. You're living in the middle of nowhere, you know, there's nothing to do, you're on your own, you've not you know you haven't got a wife, kids with you to sort of share the experience with, and it's like, what am I doing? I'm earning a bit of money, but I've got no complete social network side, and you've got you know you've got no one around for support.
And it's not like it's not life-changing money. It's not a couple of
No.
hundred grand a week, you know. It's still good money, but yeah, as you say,
No.
for the sacrifices you give up, it's not
Yeah.
life-changing, which you could do for 12 months if it was life-changing money.
Yeah, and I think that's what's opened my eyes up coming here, that even though the deal I'm on is a great deal and I'm enjoying, you know, the time I'm spending here, it's more of what is to come with it. Because for someone like me, I would like now to stay here for the rest of my career, you know, get the citizenship and then probably look to set a little base here. So that's my plan. Whereas a lot of lads go into some of these things, you know, gung ho, and it's like, hold on a minute, you need to think, because it might be great if you're earning, I don't know, $5,000 tax free for a season, but it's, you know, what's to come after that if it goes pear shaped. And that's exactly what happened to me in Malaysia, and it's something I couldn't cope with. You know, and it took me a long time to sort of get my head back round and down to earth.
Yeah, because I guess from what you'd said there, it feels like you're a proper top level professional player, getting paid, you know, decent money, good accommodation, flying to games. Even though you didn't have the crowds, you've got that social media experience, and it's so big, and it's live on YouTube. You're getting recognized in
Yeah.
supermarkets, which is an amazing experience, and you know, great to have. But as you say, there's a downside when it does end, because it'll always end at some point. Is
Yeah.
to yeah, have some sort of plan or set yourself up for what's next.
Yeah, I think especially if you've never sort of, because obviously if you play for a small club like Barrow, for example, and you play in Barrow, the people of Barrow know who you are. But if you were to then go to sit in the middle of a restaurant in Manchester, no one care less. And I think that's why quite a lot of the English lads, I think Rooney was talking about it the other day. I think that's why he loved his time at DC United, because he went over there, goes to the restaurants out there. No one knows who he is. Goes to a sports bar to watch the game. He's not getting mired up for pictures. So for someone like him, the other side was great because his first time in his life, you know, it never happened where we would have a laugh about it. We'd go to the supermarket and there'd be people like, oh, like hold the baby and like pose with my child. And it's just, you know, I'm taking pictures of my mate, like laughing at him, you know, sort of getting all this stuff. So it was, like I say, it was just a crazy time. And, you know, it was something that we'd never experienced before. And, you know, the fans obviously couldn't come to the games, which is a big shame, but they'd still be outside the ground and you could hear them outside the ground.
Crazy, isn't it? I know. In fact, I spoke to another player, an Aussie, who's playing in Malaysia, and he loves it. He's playing it. Is it Pohang? Pohang?
Bang.
Bang, yeah. He loves
Yeah.
it. He's been lucky that it's been after COVID, and he's just like, yeah, passionate fans everywhere he goes, all around the country. He's
Yeah. Well,
really
they've just
enjoying it.
implemented VAR in that league now. They're really starting to, you know, make these adjustments to make the league even more professional and just well, you know, reciprocated around the world, instead of people saying, oh, it's awful over there, you don't want to bother going over there, the football's horrendous or whatever. Whereas they went to the Asian Cup not long ago, and I think they drew with South Korea 3-3, with Son playing, Hwang playing, like some big names there, the boy from PSG, Kim. So it's getting competitive as the years go on, and there's better players going there. You know, my advice, if anyone asks me about going there, is Just do your research, and I'll always help lads. And lads have always asked me because of where I've played and places like that. I'll always help. You just got to be honest with these people when they ask.
Yeah, and I think it is. There's better players going there. You've also got better coaches, which is hopefully improving the local players as well. So it's bringing that local level up a little bit, bringing in some foreigners, and just over time it'll just improve. And as you say, with more and more money going into just Asian football in general, it's just opportunities, all over the place.
Yeah, I think a lot of people see certain parts of it and think, oh, it's going to be a great holiday, this. But I think when you are playing at that level, it's probably harder than it is from where you've come from, because it's all on you. If you don't put the ball in the back of the net, or if you're a defender, if you're not making sure you have a clean sheet every week, there's going to be questions asked like, why have we brought this lad all the way in? Because a visa import player is, important. Like, he's more important than anyone in this team. And their eyes are on you. And if you're not doing the business, it's, pack your bags, you're going home. And if you like the other side of it, and if you're living in an amazing place, like, if you're living on the beach in Pahang, and you think, oh, I'm just going to go to the beach every day and enjoy this side of it, it's careful, because you're not on holiday. And I think that's what a lot of people can misconstrue sometimes, in these sort of idyllic places.
Yeah, no, there's definitely a lot more pressure on, as you say, the visa player, because you're brought in to be one of the better players or the best player in the team. So there's pressure there to perform.
Yeah. This is my fourth time now as a visa player. And I like to think I've adjusted to it well, and I like to think I bring certain things to the table. With my experience now at 30, 31 at the end of this year. And it's just a case of making sure, the other side of it doesn't, take the prime effect, really, because, like I said, I've seen a few lads who, have travelled to certain places, and they live a certain lifestyle, and they get sent packing quite early. So you just have to find that balance. Is really important, and especially, in some of the places I've lived in. I was quite lucky that, like, in Italy, in Malaysia, I lived in quite remote areas where there wasn't like a huge sort of nightlife scene or a huge culture like that. I was quite fortunate, really, that sort of, it comes, second.
Yeah, less distractions, because it could be
Yeah, which is
easy.
a lot better.
Yeah, because it could be easy going to a foreign country like that. You're on your own. There's a lot of time, a lot of downtime. So if you do have, bars and clubs and all sorts around, it's an easy temptation, isn't it, to give into?
Yeah, well, obviously we were quite lucky when we lived in Kelantan. It was obviously a Muslim state, so they didn't serve alcohol. There was just a few, I think there was one or two Chinese underground bars that served alcohol. So you're away from that. And I lived in an apartment with a Greek lad who was same age as me. So we got on like a house on fire, and he's still one of my best friends to this day. So I was very lucky that, I had him, and we were able to, bounce off each other. And if we had a few days off, we'd go down to Kuala Lumpur, enjoy ourselves, and come straight back. It wasn't a case of taking the mic with it and going away just for the sake of it. You have two, you have one day off, and you fly down there. It's important that you do have that balance, because you want to enjoy yourself to get the best out of your football self. Because I found that a lot, where if you're stuck in a bit of a rut, and your social side, is non-existent, and you're just doing the same, same things every day without, that interaction and something different, it can take a big effect on the football. I'm not saying, you have to go out for meals every night or something like that, but it's just, changing it up a bit, changing the environment, and meeting new people. Like, a lot of my friends in Malaysia now are non-footballers. A lad who I stay with every time I visit Kuala Lumpur is, he's not a footballer. He doesn't know a thing about football. And that's probably why we get on so well, because we just get on as people, and we don't have to talk about anything to do with, that side of my life, which is quite nice, really.
And then just going back quickly, because I'll wrap it up for you soon. I'm keeping you on here for a
No, mate,
while.
it's okay.
But with the social media sites, is that some advice that you would give to others? Is if it's not something that's natural to you, is just try and do a bit more. You don't have to be, obviously on there all the time, but just do a bit more if that is your goal, to get some exposure overseas, especially through Asia, is just have a bit more of a presence.
Yeah, I mean, I think I didn't actually have an Instagram before I went to Malaysia, and then I thought, right, I better sort this out because it needs to happen. Because people, family and friends will actually want to see what's going on, not just me. And I think I gained about, I know it's not a lot, but I think I opened my Instagram and after a week I had 2,000 followers after a week because the club's so big, it was just a case of like follow, you know. And I just didn't hit it when the iron was hot. And there's a big game to be played, I think, with social media over there, like I said to you before. And I've just never been one to do that. And I think that's just my upbringing from, you know, you were seen as busy if you did that, or you were, you know, you were made fun of because you were, you know, you were doing all this stuff. Whereas some of the lads who I know who were busy or did all that stuff have probably gone on to have really good careers, not due to ability, just due to, you know, now it's called networking. You know, now it is called networking, and I know a lot of lads who have done that and gone on to have really good careers and stayed relevant.
Even
And
I
so it's
guess
something.
I was just going to say, on top of that, is just the odd, whether it's an endorsement deal here or there, or a bit of money for a paid post because you've got that following, and it just opens up those different opportunities, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's something that can be taken advantage of massively. Like, there's so much money in that social media space now where, you know, the higher up you go, the less you pay for, you know, your boots are given. You might say, oh, just do a sponsor for this drink, or, you know, wear these trainers. And Puma say, well, here's a load of track suits and training gear. And, you know, you're not spending any of your wage then because everything's just given to you for free. And I think I just didn't take advantage of that straight away when I should have. And I think that was just a little bit of naivety, really. I think I went in there sort of thinking, oh no, I'll be fine, with sort of the wrong mindset, instead of thinking, right, I've got a contract, let's make the most of this. Instead of being like, right, I've got a contract, I'm going to be fine, I'm going to back my ability and my stuff on the pitch to get me through, where a lot of it is off the pitch.
No, it's a good point because it is now football. It is such a business on and off the field, and the more you can market yourself in a way, or even bring in, you know, whether you have to pay an agency or whatever it is to just help you do it if you don't naturally do it, it's probably worth looking at and doing a bit of research into anyway.
Yeah, for sure. There's a lot of lads who are probably signing deals now or new deals at the same clubs, not because of their ability, because, oh, I can trust him. I know what he's like off the pitch. I spend time with him off the pitch, and they have that rapport, that relationship that goes a long way. Like the relationships I've built here in the last couple of, or the last 18 months or so, in Australia, to sort of be like, you know, if the Peninsula Power manager comes down to Brisbane for work in a few weeks, we'll go for dinner, we'll catch up, because it's important that you do that. And, you know, you have a friendship, and we might not even talk about football for that whole time, but it's just having that rapport, really. And, you know, not re less resting on your laurels to be like, no, I'm going to be fine. You need to be proactive. And that's probably the bit of advice I do give people, is just to be proactive, really, because if you don't do it, no one's going to do it for you.
No, very true. Very true. Well, Jack, I really appreciate your time, mate. It was really insightful, and I'm glad that you had such a, even though it was a tough experience, it was probably a fantastic experience that you've enjoyed thoroughly, especially when you look back on it.
Yeah, like I say, it's one of the, you know, one of my most proudest moments. Hopefully I can keep that away of being the only English person to play in Malaysia for a bit longer. But you know, something I'm proud of, and you look back on it and, you know, you can reflect from it. And I'm, you know, very happy to have had the career I've had and done some of the things I've done. I've got no regrets, and, you know, I've met some amazing people and done some amazing things along the way. And, you know, at 30, 31 nearly, hopefully there's still going to be a couple more years left.
Yeah, a couple more years of football in Australia, and then plan for life after.
Yeah, and then get up to the Gold Coast where you are.
Yeah, I know. It's nice up here. No, Jake, I really appreciate your time, mate. It was fantastic.
No, I appreciate it, Chris. Thank you very much for having me, mate.
No problem.